Okay, so you sent over this white paper, Agents, right? By Julia Wiesinger, Patrick Marlowe, and Vladimir Vucevic.
Yep, September 2nd, 2024.
Right, with acknowledgments to a whole bunch of contributors too. So, yeah, thanks for sending that over. I think it'd be great to kind of really dig into this and get a handle on what exactly an agent is as they define it.
Sure, yeah, happy to break it down. You know, I think it's definitely one of those terms that gets thrown around a lot these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, just having that clear, that foundational understanding is huge.
Yeah, so this deep dive is all about understanding these agents as the paper defines them. And I think, you know, for our listeners, we want to kind of pull out the essential elements that you need to grasp this whole technology, right? Instead of having to read through, like, you know, dense research papers.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're trying to extract those insights and make them as digestible as possible.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just to get right to it, the paper lays out a pretty clear definition, I think. It says an agent is basically an application, but it's an application that is trying to achieve a goal. And it does that, right? It's not just passively sitting there, it's actually observing the world, and then it takes steps, it uses tools to achieve that goal, whatever it is. And I think the really interesting part here is that it does this autonomously. So, you know, they can operate independently and even, you know, proactively to reach their objectives. And I think for the purposes of our deep dive today, we're really going to zero in on the agents that are powered by these generative AI models.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things the paper really does well is it emphasizes that to really understand these agents, these, you know, autonomous actors, if you will, you have to kind of look under the hood, right? They have what they call this cognitive architecture. And, you know, referencing figure one in the paper, they break it down into these three essential components. The model itself, kind of like the brains of the operation, the tools that it uses to actually interact with the world, and then that orchestration layer, which basically dictates how the model and the tools actually work together. So I think it'll be really helpful as we go through this to kind of break each above down so we have a really solid understanding of the engine that's driving these things.
So I guess we should start with that brain part, right? The model.
Right.
And I think the paper does a good job of calling this out as the central decision-making engine of the whole agent system. So in this case, the model refers to the language model, or potentially language models, that are actually making the calls, right, for the actions that the agent will take.
Exactly. Yeah. It can be, you know, one large language model, one of those big powerhouses,
Yeah.
or it could be a bunch of, you know, different smaller language models kind of working in concert.
Interesting.
Yeah. And what's key is their ability to do this instruction-based reasoning so they can leverage these different logic frameworks you might have heard of, like React, Chain of Thought, Tree of Thoughts, these kind of sophisticated ways of figuring out how to tackle a problem.
So I guess these models, they're not just like one size fits all either, right?
Right.
The paper talks about how they could be general purpose, they can be multimodal, meaning they can handle different kinds of data, like text and images. Or they could be specifically fine-tuned for certain tasks. But one thing that really jumped out at me was the emphasis on the training data. That seems pretty critical.
Yeah, it's a really, really key insight. So for optimal performance, you really want a model that's been trained on data that's similar to the tools that the agent will actually be using. You know, if you think about it, like if you have an agent and its job is to book flights, you want to have a model that's already got some foundational knowledge, right, about travel, about airlines, about destination, just intuitively makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. And I find it interesting that even though the model is like this core intelligence, it's usually not trained with the agent's specific toolkit or reasoning setup, like, you know, built in from the beginning. But the paper does say you can kind of refine that by showing it examples of how the agent should operate, including how to use its tools in different situations.
Yeah, exactly. So even though it's not trained from the ground up with that exact configuration, you can kind of mold its behavior by saying, hey, look, here's how this agent should actually be acting. Here's how it should be using its tools, kind of like giving it on-the-job training.
Yeah, it's like an apprenticeship or something like that. Okay, cool. So that's the model, the brain. But what about, you know, the agent's hands, feet, like how it actually connects for the real world? I guess that's where the tools come in.
Yeah, exactly. The tools are that crucial link. They connect the model's internal intelligence, its ability to reason and plan, with the external world. And I think this is where it gets really interesting, because you're right, language models on their own are limited, right? They can only work with the data they were trained on.
Right, right.
But tools are how they break free from that constraint. They allow them to go beyond their internal knowledge base and interact with all sorts of external data and services.
It's like the language model can, you know, talk about the weather, but it can't actually go out and get the current weather conditions, right? It needs a tool to do that.
Exactly.
And the paper makes a point that these tools often use those standard web API methods, you know, like get to pull information, post to send data, patch to update things, delete to remove things.
Right.
They even give some real world examples, like a tool that would update customers' details in a database, or another tool that would, you know, go and get the latest weather forecast. So we're talking about, you know, practical things these agents can do.
Yeah, and I think one of the most profound things that these tools enable is what's called retrieval augmented generation, or RAG.
RAG, right.
Yeah, and this is, you know, basically where the agent can tap into and process all sorts of current real world information going way beyond what it originally knew from its training data. It's like giving the agent access to this huge, constantly updated encyclopedia.
Interesting. So the paper actually breaks down these tools into three main categories, right? At least for Google models at the time of writing.
Right.
They talk about extensions, functions, and data stores. So I guess we should dive into each of those to see how they're different and when you'd actually want to use one versus the other.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's start with extensions. Extensions are basically a standardized way for agents to work with APIs, you know, application programming interfaces.
Right.
Regardless of the specific details of that API, the idea is to have this consistent way for the agent to make those API calls without needing to know the ins and outs of every single API out there.
Yeah, and they use this really good example in the paper with like a flight booking agent wanting to use the Google Flights API.
Right.
And they contrast this with how you might do this traditionally, where you'd have to write all this custom code to take the user's request and then figure out how to, you know, craft the right API call, which I imagine would be pretty complex, right? Especially when people could be phrasing their needs in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah, it's super brittle. You constantly have to update that custom code to handle new scenarios, new ways of asking for things. Extensions offer a much more resilient approach. They essentially teach the agent how to use that API endpoint by providing examples and saying, okay, here are the required arguments or parameters that you need to successfully call this API. And there's a really good visualization of this in figure 4 in the paper.
So instead of having to code all that complex logic by hand,
right,
the developer is basically giving the agent the knowledge and structure it needs to just figure out how to use the API on its own. I guess that's much more efficient. And the paper mentions these built-in example types as a big advantage, which basically let the agent dynamically choose which extension to use based on the user's request.
Yeah, it's like giving the agent the right tool for the right job.
Right, right.
You know, just like a software developer, right, would choose which API endpoint to use. If they want to book a flight, they'd call the Google Flights API. If they want to get directions, they'd call the Google Maps API.
Right.
The agent, using its model and these extensions, figures out which one to use.
Makes total sense. And the paper mentioned you could even, like, play around with extensions in the Gemini app.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually get a hands-on sense of how they work.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. Now, they also talk about this thing called a code interpreter extension, which sounds really interesting.
Yeah, the code interpreter is pretty cool. It's essentially an example extension. And what it does is it can actually generate and run Python code based on natural language.
Wow.
So you could tell it, hey, write a Python function to, you know, do this calculation. And it would not only produce the code, but it would also run it, which is really powerful when you think about it, that an agent can now actually execute code.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so we've covered extensions. What about functions? How are those different?
So functions in this context are basically little self-contained pieces of code.
Okay.
Kind of like functions in regular software development.
Right.
And the model gets to decide when to use a particular function and what arguments to give it based on how the function's been defined. But there are some important differences between functions and extensions.
Yeah, the paper mentions that with functions, the model outputs the function to call and its arguments, but it doesn't actually make the API call itself. And functions are also executed on the client side, whereas extensions happen on the agent side. Can you explain that a bit more? Like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, sure. So let's think back to that Google Flights example.
Right.
With functions, neither the function itself nor the agent is actually talking directly to the Google Flights API. Instead, that responsibility is handed off to the client side application. That's illustrated in figure 7, 8, and 9 in the paper.
Okay.
So that gives the developer a lot more control over exactly how the data flows within their application.
So I guess there are times where you specifically choose a function over an extension.
Absolutely, yeah. The paper lists a bunch of reasons why you might go with a function. For example, maybe the API call needs to happen from a different part of the application.
Okay.
Or maybe there are really tight security or authentication restrictions that prevent the agent from talking to the API directly. Sometimes there might be timing constraints where you need to do things in batches or have a human review something. Functions give you that flexibility.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the paper talks about how sometimes you might need to do some extra processing on the API response that the agent can't handle. Or maybe you want to be able to develop the agent without having to actually set up the whole API infrastructure. Functions can help with that too.
Yeah, exactly. They let you simulate API interactions during development, what they call stubbing the API.
Right, right.
So you can build and test the agent without needing everything to be fully set up.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and the paper actually gives a nice concrete example of a travel concierge that books ski trips, and it shows how functions can be used to format the output in a structured way, like using JSON, so other systems can easily understand it.
Oh, that's neat. And figure 9, that sequence diagram, really clarifies how that interaction works. So the model provides the necessary details, and then the client-side UI uses those details to make the actual call to the Google Places API in this particular example.
Right. It's like the model is providing the blueprint, and the client is doing the construction.
Yeah. Okay. I see. And the paper even mentions other use cases for function calling, like suggesting functions without having to give away sensitive credentials, or handling operations that need to happen in the background, or even running functions on a totally different device.
Yeah, it's pretty versatile. So the key takeaway with functions is they give developers way more control over how those APIs get called and how the data flows through their application.
Right.
They can even decide whether or not to send the data from the API back to the agent. And there are even some code snippets, snippet 6 and 7, that show how you can actually define a function and use it with the Gemini-1.5/-0001 model, so you can actually see how it works in practice.
That's really helpful. Okay, so we've covered extensions, we've covered functions. What about data stores? How do those fit in?
So data stores tackle another big limitation of language models, which is that their knowledge is static. It's based on whatever data they were trained on, which might be outdated. Data stores let agents access more dynamic and current information, so their responses are, you know, more accurate, more relevant. It's like the language model is a library full of books.
Okay.
And data stores let them go beyond those books and access the latest information.
Got it. And they explain in the paper that data stores let developers provide additional data like spreadsheets, PDFs, in their original format. You don't need to transform them or retrain the model.
Yeah, exactly. You just feed them in, and the data store does the work of making them usable by the agent. And figure 10 in the paper really illustrates that. It's about bringing in this external knowledge.
Okay, so how does the agent actually use that data?
So the data store takes those documents, spreadsheets, PDFs, whatever, and it turns them into what are called vector database embeddings. That's shown in figure 11. And these embeddings allow the agent to quickly find and extract the exact information it needs.
Interesting. So it's almost like building a search engine for your own knowledge base.
Precisely, yeah. And a great example of this is retrieval augmented generation, or RAG.
Yeah, they talk about that a lot.
Which we touched on earlier. And it's all about extending the model's knowledge by giving it access to different data formats, website content, structured data like PDFs and CSVs, unstructured data like HTML and TXT. Figure 12 kind of shows you the different formats you can use. So it's about making sure that the agent's responses are actually grounded in real information.
So it's not just making stuff up.
Right. And figure 13 walks through the whole process of how RAG works. It takes the user's query, turns it into an embedding, uses that to find relevant content in the vector database, and then that content is given to the agent along with the original query so it can formulate a really good response.
Cool. And the agent might even do multiple searches to really refine those results. They show an example of a RAG-based application in figure 14 that uses React reasoning.
Right, so it ties all these concepts together.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so we've got extensions, functions, and data stores. And the paper has this nice table that sums up the key differences.
Yeah, it's a good reference to keep them straight.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, even with all these tools, how does the model actually decide which tool to use at any given time? Especially when you start thinking about scaling these things up. It seems like it would be really hard to make sure the agent is always picking the right tool.
Yeah, that's one of the big challenges. It's not enough to just give the agent a toolbox.
Right.
It needs to know when to use each tool. The paper uses this analogy of cooking where they compare basic cooking skills with mastering a particular cuisine.
Okay.
Both require some basic knowledge, but mastering a cuisine requires this targeted learning. You need to know the specific techniques, ingredients, and flavors.
And they talk about three ways to achieve that targeted learning, right?
Yeah, the first one is in-context learning,
Right.
where you give the model the prompt, the tools, and a few examples all at the same time so it can learn in the moment how to use those tools for that specific request. The React framework is a good example of this.
Right.
Like the chef who's given a recipe, ingredients, and some examples of dishes, and then figures out how to cook the meal based on that information and their general knowledge.
Okay, so what's the second approach?
The second is retrieval-based in-context learning.
Right.
And this one takes it a step further. It dynamically adds more information, tools, and examples to the prompt from an external memory store.
So it's like giving the chef a well-stocked pantry and a bunch of cookbooks to choose from.
Exactly. Yeah, the example store in Vertex AI Extensions is a good example.
Cool. And what about the third one?
The third one is fine-tuning-based learning, and this one is about training the model on a huge data set of specific examples before it's used for anything.
Okay.
So it learns those patterns of when and how to use the tools before it even gets a user query.
So that's like sending the chef to culinary school to specialize in a particular type of cuisine.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. It's really helpful when you want the agent to be an expert in some specific domain.
Makes sense. And the paper points out that each of these approaches has trade-offs in terms of speed, cost, and latency.
Right. Where real power comes when you combine these methods.
Okay, yeah, it's about finding the right balance for the specific task. Now, for anyone who's listening and thinking, okay, all this is great, but how do I actually start building one of these agents? The paper talks about using LangChain.
Right, yeah. LangChain and LangGraph are these popular open source libraries that make building agents a lot easier. They let you chain together logic, reasoning, and tool calls to fulfill a user's request.
And they even have a really good example in the paper.
Yeah, they use the Gemini-1.5 Flash-001 model with SerpI for Google Search and the Google Places API. And the example query is, who did the Texas Longhorns play in football last week? And what's the address of the opposing team's stadium?
So it's a multi-step request, right?
Right, it has to first figure out who they played, then find the address of the stadium.
And Snippet 9 shows the actual output, and you can see the agent using both tools to get the answer.
It's a nice, concrete illustration of how those core components, the model, the orchestration logic, and the tools all work together.
Okay, cool. Now, the paper also talks about using Google's Vertex AI platform for production applications. How does that work?
So Vertex AI is a fully managed environment. It handles all the complexity of deploying and running these agents in the real world. And it has a really user-friendly interface where you can define what your agent is supposed to do, what tools it can use, and you can even create sub-agents to handle specialized tasks.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just for prototyping. You can actually build real-world applications with it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's got all the bells and whistles, development tools for testing, debugging, refining the agent's performance, and so on. And it takes care of all the infrastructure and maintenance so you can just focus on building the agent itself.
That's awesome. And Figure 15 actually shows a sample architecture of an agent built on Vertex AI.
Yeah, it shows you how all the pieces fit together. It's really helpful.
Cool. So towards the end, the paper summarizes the key takeaways, which I think is really helpful.
Definitely, yeah.
So the first one is that agents really enhance the power of language models.
Right.
They can access real-time information, take actions in the real world, and manage complex tasks, all by combining one or more models with these external tools.
It's about going beyond just talking to actually doing.
Yeah. And the second takeaway is that the orchestration layer is super important.
Right. It provides the structure for reasoning, planning, and decision-making. And that often involves using sophisticated techniques like React, Chain of Thought, and Tree of Thoughts.
So it's like the conductor of the whole operation.
Exactly, yeah. And then the third takeaway is all about those tools, the extensions, functions, and data stores. They're how agents connect to the outside world. Extensions give them access to APIs in a standardized way. Functions give developers more control with client-side execution. And data stores let them work with both structured and unstructured data. So you have a lot of flexibility in how you build these agents.
Very cool. And the paper even touches on the future of agents, which sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, they talk about even more advanced tools, better reasoning capabilities, and the trend of agent chaining, where you combine multiple agents to handle even more complex stuff.
Wow, like a team of agents working together.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of potential there.
That's awesome. And they end by reminding us that building these complex agents is an iterative process.
Right.
You have to experiment, refine, and really tailor it to your specific needs.
Right. No two agents are going to be exactly alike, but understanding those core components, the models, tools, and orchestration is key to building something truly impactful.
Well said. So to our listener, as you've been listening to all of this, I'd encourage you to think about how these concepts might apply to your work or to anything you're interested in.
Yeah. What kind of agent could you build?
Yeah. What kind of problems could you solve? Which of those tools, extensions, functions, data stores seem the most relevant to you? And maybe check out the documentation for LaneChain or Vertex AI if you want to learn more.
Yeah, those are great resources.
Okay, well, I think that was a really interesting deep dive.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fascinating area.
Yeah.
A lot to explore.
Yeah.